Today's scripture reading is from the book of Job, chapter 1, verses 1 through 12. There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright, and one who feared God and shunned evil. And 7 sons and 3 daughters were born to him. Also his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very large household, so that this man was the greatest of all the people of the East. And his sons would go and feast in their houses, each on his appointed day, and would send and invite their 3 sisters to eat and drink with them. So it was, when the days of feasting had run their course, that Job would send and sanctify them, and he would rise early in the morning and offer burnt offerings according to the number of them all. For Job said, "It may be that my sons have sinned and cursed God in their hearts." Thus Job did regularly. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan also came among them. And the Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "From going to and fro on the earth, and from walking back and forth on it." Then the Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job, that there is none like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, one who fears God and shuns evil?" So Satan answered the Lord and said, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not made a hedge around him, around his household, and around all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands, and his possessions have increased in the land. But now stretch out your hand and touch all that he has, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not lay a hand on his person." So Satan went out from the presence of the Lord. This is the word of God for the people of God. Have you ever wondered what it would be like to be born with the proverbial silver spoon in your mouth? I wasn't. But my parents always provided me with what I needed to survive and make my way through school and into adulthood in the workforce. I grew up in the Oak Hills district, right up the street, and there was a wide variety of family incomes represented in our schools. I was not jealous of my friends and their possessions, but every once in a while I'd sit and dream about having a bigger wardrobe or a better stereo or a nicer car than the 62 Corvair that was my first ride. After a while, I realized that dreaming was not going to make anything happen, but by applying myself to my schoolwork and career, I might be able to have some of the luxuries that my friends took for granted. I wasn't jealous of my friends because I had what I needed, but I do have to admit that one day the ride home from school in a Bentley was a little different than what I was normally used to. Job was a man who seemingly had everything. As we heard, 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, yokes of oxen, a large household, 7 sons and 3 daughters. More importantly, he was blameless and upright, feared God and shunned evil. We heard that the angels and Satan appeared before God, and Satan questions God about the fact that Job has been so prosperous, and he would bless God because he knows that he does not fear God. Then God then puts Job to the test by saying to Satan, "He is in your power, but do not lay a hand on his person. Imagine what, if you will, what Satan was doing then. Satan considering what to do to prove God wrong. How he must have anticipated what he was going to say when Job failed and turned against God. We read further in the first chapter of Job the torment that came upon Satan. I was thinking when I read this that this is an interesting chapter because basically it's like an old TV show. The first chapter sets the stage for what's going to happen. then we have a lot of the action and the resolution after. Anymore, I guess with short attention span theater, if you watch a show now, the action happens in the first 30 seconds. If it doesn't, people leave and go watch something else. But this builds up. So for the first part of that chapter, you really don't know what's going to happen, but the stage is set. So this is what Satan did to Job. Now there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house. And a messenger came to Job and said, "The oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them, when the Sabians raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was speaking, another came and said, "The fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you." While he was still speaking, another came and said, "The Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels and took them away, and killed the servants with the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you." And while he was speaking, yet still, another came and said, "Your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are all dead. And I alone have escaped to tell you." I don't know about each of you, but at that point, I would have been hard-pressed not to turn away from God. Here's a man who had everything, and in the short space of time, it's all gone. No one would have been surprised if Job had railed against God for the misfortune that had befallen him. But this is what he did. "Then Job arose, tore his robe, and shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshipped. And he said, 'Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.' And in all this, Job did not sin or charge God with being wrong." You would think that would be enough to end the temptation of Job. But shortly thereafter, the angels and Satan appeared before the Lord with much the same discussion as before. God said to Satan, "Job still maintains his integrity, even though you had incited me against him to destroy him without cause." Satan replied, "Skin for skin. Yes, all that man has he will give for his life. But stretch out your hand now and touch his bone and his flesh, and he will surely curse you to your face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, he is in your hand, but spare his life." Once again, Satan is anticipating what he can do to prove God wrong and prove himself right. So Satan struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And Job took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of the ashes. Then his wife said to him, "Do you still hold fast to your integrity? Curse God and die." But he said to her, "You speak foolishly. Shall we indeed accept good from God, and shall we not accept adversity? In all this, Job did not sin with his lips." In all this, Job kept his integrity, kept his faith in God, did not speak against him. And although there were no more attacks from Satan, Job still suffered from the sores that Satan had inflicted on him. Three of his friends, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar, left their homes and came to comfort Job. When they saw him, they cried out at his condition and tore their own clothes. Then they sat with Job for 7 days, saying nothing, since they could see that Job was suffering greatly. The rest of the book of Job is a series of discussions between Job and his friends. But all this time, God is listening to him. After 7 days, Job spoke and his friends responded. They felt that God would not let an innocent person suffer, which was the feeling that many of the religious people had at that time. So Job must have done something wrong in God's eyes. Job argued that he was innocent, and he supposed that possibly God was unfair. However, God was kind to Job even when he was suffering. Job learned that death is not the end of everything, and that God would rescue him. Then there appeared another young man named Elihu, younger than Job's other friends, but much wiser. He was afraid to speak because, as they felt then, that if you were being punished, it was because you had done something wrong. They also felt that the older people had to be much wiser than the younger ones, and he was afraid to speak. But after a time, he could take it no more, and he chastised Job's friends for steering him in the wrong direction. He also told Job not to accuse God, and that he had become angry with the friends over the fact that they had been cruel to Job. A storm then approached, and God spoke to them from out of the storm. He reminded all of them that he had created all things, so no one could accuse God or say that he is not fair, but should respect him and be humble. Job said that he was sorry for the things that he had said about God. God told the three friends to make an offering because he was incited with them because of the way they had treated Job, and asked Job to pray for them and that they would be forgiven for their wrong thoughts. Because of Job's piety and his prayer for his friends, God forgave all of them. Job was made successful again, more so than he had been previously. He was again blessed with 7 sons and 3 daughters, who were said to be the fairest in the land. He lived for 140 years after all this occurred and was able to see the children of his grandchildren. During his discourse, Job thought that he would be wealthy for his whole life. Then he thought that he would die because of his illness with nothing of his own. But in the end, Job was wealthy again. Our lives often change like this. We should learn to be content with whatever happens. We read in Philippians 4:11 through 12. Not that I speak in regard to need, for I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased, and I know how to abound. Everywhere and in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry, both to abound and to suffer need. Whether we are rich or poor, no matter what our situation, we should always, as Job did, trust God. From Habakkuk 3:17-18, though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls, yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will have joy in the God of my salvation. That's all I have. Short and sweet.